We're in the middle of explaining why we read Pirkei Avos, or learn Pirkei Avos, according to two different customs. Last week we discussed why the custom is to say Pirkei Avos between Pesach and Shavuos, and that basically is because, even though some say it's because of the change in weather, and things are getting hot, and therefore people have more time to be outside and do more averus, and therefore you need to learn the Musar of Pirkei Avos. The main idea is that it's preparation for the receiving of the Torah, and since Pirkei Avos basically deals with two things, the importance and many of the principles of Torah learning, and also Derech Eretz, both of those are necessary as a preparation for receiving the Torah. Because Derech Eretz Kodma La Torah, without Midos Tovos, we said the person can never have the Torah on a permanent basis, and without understanding the importance of Torah, a person won't be able to receive it properly, because part of being able to receive something is having a desire for it, having a yearning for it. So therefore, those Pirkei Avos is the preparation for the receiving of the Torah on Shavuos. According to those that the custom is, like our custom, to do it between Pesach and Rosh Hashanah, where we go from after Pesach till Rosh Hashanah. We explained last time also, simple idea is that after you finish preparing for the Torah, you want to now prepare for Yom Kippur, for Yomim Noroyim, and Musar, and Torah are again very, very important things to prepare a person for his judgment on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We gave another idea. We explained why the custom is that during the summer we basically learn Pirkei Avos between Mincha and Maariv on Shabbos afternoon, and in the winter we say Borchi Nafshi. Borchi Nafshi is Tehillim 104, which has to do with nature. And last week we explained in detail that you always need two paths to reach God. The path of Torah and then the path of nature. The Rambam says that the way to come to love and fear of God, in one place the Rambam says the way is through learning Torah. You become familiar with God, who Torah is God's mind, God's will. So the way to become familiar with God, and the more familiar you are, the more love and fear you can have. So that is through Torah learning. In another place, the Rambam says that the way to come to love and fear of God is by observing nature and being overawed by the wisdom of God in creation, in nature, and in that way one comes to love and fear, stand in awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we explain that they are not exclusive, but both paths are necessary. But the Torah path has to come first, because the Torah gives you the direction to be able to see nature properly. So we said that since you always need these two paths, so in the summer, the path of nature is in full bloom. But the path of Torah is minimized, because the main Torah learning is at night. Main learning of Torah, man's Torah learning of Torah Shebaal Peh, of the Gemara, is a nighttime learning. And the summer, the nights are very short. So therefore, you need to supplement the path of Torah in the summer. So we learn Pirkei Avos, which accentuates the path of Torah. In the winter, just the opposite. The nights are long, so Torah is at its high point. But nature is hibernating. Nature is not readily visible. and therefore we need to supplement the path of nature. So we say Borchi Nafshi, and specifically Shabbos afternoon, because Shabbos is the day of the week where we reach greater heights in Ahavas Hashem. Shabbos engenders love of God, and the time of Shabbos that is the height of the love of God during the week is Shalosh Shuvos time, Mincha time. So at Mincha time on Shabbos, you want to reach those high levels of love of God, you need both paths. You need the path of Torah and the path of nature. In the summer, the path of nature is there, but the path of Torah needs to be supplemented. And in the winter, the path of Torah is there, but the path of nature needs to be supplemented. And therefore, in the summer, we learn Pirkei Avos, and in the winter, we say Borchi Nafshi. That's what we explained last time. We will go back to this idea of needing two paths, the path of nature and the path of Torah. When we speak about Hanukkah, we'll use this as a introduction to connect the two ideas. In fact, maybe we should do that now, and at this time we'll go on Pirkei Avos. We've explained in the past, and I'm not going to go into great detail now, I think even last week we spoke about it, that Hanukkah, the major lesson of Hanukkah, the message of the miracle is that although in this world there is an external physical side, materialistic side to the world, there's also a spiritual side to the world. And the two can work together very nicely, which we will explain in a few minutes. But when there's a conflict between them, it is the spiritual things that are more significant than the physical, external, material things. Greece, the Greek Empire, represented with their philosophy that there is no internal spiritual values in this world. They deified the external, physical, material, external might, external beauty, external power, external wisdom. Everything was merely an outer physical facade. They denied completely that there was any inner spiritual meaning to this world. And that was the things that they made against us. They tried to eradicate any inner spiritual meaning to our way of life. We explained that that's why they made gzeiros against Shabbos and Bris Milah and Rosh Chodesh and women and money. We'll get back to them in a second. But, and therefore the miracle of Hanukkah represents that. What was the miracle? Two things. The victory of the war was one miracle, and the miracle of the oil. But they both give the same message. The victory of the war is portrayed in Alanisim. Giborim biad chaloshim. Rabim biad ma'atim. Tmeim biad tahorim. Rishoyim biad tzadikim. Zeidim biad oskei sorasecha. That the Rabbanu Shalom delivered the strong and the many in the hands of the weak and the few. He also delivered the pure, the impure in the hand of the pure, and the righteous, the wicked in the hands of the righteous, and those who were sinners in the hands of the people who busied themselves in Torah. So we asked, I understand, and a lot of people ask the same question. There's many different answers, but I think the answer I'm going to give you, in my eyes, is the answer. The question is, I understand that when the many and the strong are handed into the hands of the weak and the few, it's a miracle. That's against nature. Naturally speaking, the strong and the many win. So it's a miracle. But what's the miracle about the impure being handed in the hands of the pure, or the wicked in the hands of the righteous? Is there some unwritten natural law that wicked people always win and impure people always win? That when the tables are turned, it's a miracle? Why is that part of the miracle? And I explained the way I understand it is that we did not win because we were few and weak. We won despite the fact that we were few and weak. So why did we win? We won because we had the spiritual edge. We were pure, righteous, and involved ourselves in Torah. They had the physical edge. They were many and strong. And the conflict was between those with the spiritual edge against those with the physical edge. And in the end, it was clear that the spiritual edge was the more significant thing. We were the ones who won. Because what is spiritual in this world is more significant than the external physical things. And that is exactly the message of the miracle of the oil. It doesn't make a difference how much oil there is. Quantity is not the main thing. It's quality. Because it was pure, even a small amount can be very effective. And if it's not pure, a ton is not going to be effective at all. And that is exactly the message of the menorah, where the miracle took place. It says in the Haftorah of last Shabbos, Shabbos Chanukah, in Zechariah, that the prophet sees a menorah, and he is told, what's the message of the menorah? Lo b'chayil v'lo b'koach ki im baruchi omar Hashem. It's not numbers and it's not physical strength, but it is God's spirit that makes the difference in this world. It's the inner spiritual things that make the difference in this world. And that is the message we give when we light our candles and sing Maoz Tzur. Maoz Tzur deals with all the empires that existed in this world, with the exception of one. They're all gone. They don't exist anymore. Not Egypt, not Babylonia, not Persia, not Media, not Greece. Only Edom is still around. All the other ones are in the history books. We're standing by our candles singing about them. They're not standing anywhere singing about us, because they don't exist anymore. And they had everything physical going for them, and they don't exist. And we had none of that going for us. But we had those candles, the inner spiritual power, and we're still around. That is basically the message of Hanukkah. Last week we spoke about it in more detail, but more or less that's enough for now. If you want to know the other details, you can listen to a tape. But for now, that was just an introduction. So all of that tells us how important the inner spiritual things are, and we do not subscribe to the external view of this world. We oppose Greece in that respect, where they made a deity out of basically supermen and superwomen. That was their gods. Their gods were physical beings. They deified external beauty, external might, wrestling and sports. Everything was external. No internal values. So you would think that if that's the case, to really show our philosophy against the philosophy of the Greeks, on Hanukkah, we should avoid any kind of beauty. So there should be a mitzvah to buy the ugliest Hanukkah menorah that you can get. I know some people who do that, but in any case, but they don't think so. We don't think of anything of external beauty, right? We are into the spiritual things, and therefore we totally negate any external beauty. We're into the ugly things in this world externally, because it doesn't make a difference. And that's not the case. The case is that there is a mitzvah, as like all mitzvahs, to do it in an aesthetically beautiful way. And external beauty is something important. And we look for, even by Hanukkah, for a beautiful menorah. Or they call it here a Chanukiah, but in any case, I used to call it a menorah. Right? A beautiful menorah. And to make it aesthetically beautiful. So which is it? Is the physical world important, not important? And we find that physical beauty is something that the Torah extols. By Sora Imenu, it tells us that she was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. Who cares? Who cares if she was beautiful or not? Sora Imenu could have been an ugly old hag, but she was Sora Imenu. What difference does it make what she looked like? And the same thing with Rivka, Yefei Toar, Yefei Mara, and Rachel, and the same thing with Yosef, was handsome. So, which is it? Do we give importance to external things or not. The Vilna Gaon, on the Pasuk, Sheker Hachein, the Hevel Hayofi, Isha Yiras Hashem Yitzalo, that beauty and charm are false and vain, and a woman who fears God should be praised. So we normally learn that beauty and charm are not important, but fear of God, that's what's important. Says the Vilna Gaon, that's not what it means. What it means is the following. When are beauty and charm false and vain? When there's nothing more. When it's only external. But Isha Yiras Hashem, in a woman that fears God, he tisalo, she should be praised for her beauty and her charm. Then the beauty and the charm are also important. What does that mean? So first I have to understand what kind of beauty we're talking about. And even though I've said this before in a different context, we'll repeat it here because it's important to understand the idea. There, it says that Sarah Imenu was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. Now, from where I sit, a 20-year-old is more beautiful than a 7-year-old. So what does that mean? She was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. Secondly, beauty is a very subjective, culturally influenced thing. There is no one standard of what's beautiful and what's not beautiful, even by women, right? For instance, in deepest Africa, there is a tribe named the Ubangis. The Ubangis have a quaint custom. When their daughters are young, they put a small half saucer between their gums and their upper lip, and it stretches their lip. As the lip stretches, they put a bigger saucer in. This is like reverse orthodonture. And as they grow and mature, their upper lip sticks out until they are teenagers. Their upper lip sticks out about a foot. You ever see what they look like? Quite a few inches. And if you are a Ubangi and you don't have an upper lip that sticks out quite a few inches, you will never find a shidduch. On the other hand, right, in America, if you have a daughter who has an upper lip that sticks out 8 inches, you send her to the orthodontist, spend thousands of dollars in correcting it because she'll never find a shidduch, right, if you don't correct it. I had a daughter who needed orthodonture work many years ago. I was thinking of sending her to the Ubangis. It would have been much, much cheaper. In any case, except the shidduchim over there are a little too black for me. So, which is it? What's beautiful? It says that Esther, Motzei Schein be'enei kol ro'eha, Nosei Schein, she found charm. She was charming in everybody's eyes. Now, how could that be? If she had an upper lip that stuck out 8 inches, then the Ubangis thought she was charming, but the Americans didn't. And if she didn't have a upper lip that stuck out 8 inches, then the Americans thought she was charming and the Ubangis didn't. So how could she be charming to everybody? The answer is there is another kind of beauty that is universal, that is not dependent on cultural influences. And that's the beauty that a 7-year-old has, the beauty of the innocence of youth. That is a universal thing. That's the beauty of an innocent 7-year-old little girl. That beauty is a reflection of an inner beauty. That's the beauty that Sarah Imenu had. That's the beauty that Esther Hamalka had. It was something that was universal. And the beauty that the Vilna Gaon is talking about and that the Torah is talking about is the following. We live in a physical world. We are not merely neshamas. We are neshamas in bodies. We have five senses. Our connection to the world is through our five senses. What makes an impression on us is physical things. And therefore, in order to engender and to enhance the spiritual things, which are the main thing in this world, they need a body, they need a plant, they need physical things to be able to relate to them properly. We'll see for four reasons. And therefore, there is an idea, even though the inner beauty, the Isha Yiras Hashem, that inner beauty of being a God-fearing person is the main thing in this world. But in order to really appreciate it, it has to be reflected externally. The externals are very important when they are connected and subjugated and subservient to the inner spiritual things. But they're very important too. Because the external things, in one respect, represent and reflect those inner spiritual values. So, yes, the main thing in this world is the inner spiritual things. But since we live in a physical world, it's the physical things that help those spiritual things to become established in four ways. Let me explain to you what the four ways are. The first is that to generate spiritual feelings, many times you need physical things. Motions create emotions. Once had a woman that was becoming more and more serious about her Yiddishkeit. She was a frum woman, but took the mitzvahs very lightly. She was brought up like that. And her Shabbos was not, you know, she didn't drive and didn't answer the phone, but wasn't more any more, too much more serious. Shmira Shabbos. Kashrus was basically, if it had a K somewhere on the label, it probably was kosher, even if it was in the name of the product. So basically, she kept mitzvahs, but very, very peripherally. And I remember she had her first child, and she got very, very serious about how she wanted to bring up that child, and she decided that she's going to become more serious about Yiddishkeit. And she started learning Hilchos Shabbos with her husband, and they became much more observant of Shabbos in a much more meaningful way. And then they kashered their house and became really makpid on kashrus. And the next step, and she was really improving in many, many areas. In Miami at that time, one area that most people were very lax in was tznius, was dressing modestly, properly, right? In Miami, it was a mazel if you got dressed altogether, so... And most people did not dress halachically properly, except for the rabbis' wives or the educators, the machanchim's wives. They, the clay kodesh, their wives dressed the way they were supposed to. But the hamonam, very rare to have someone who dressed halachically proper in those days. And so I told this woman, I said, I think that the time has come, since you are improving in so many areas, that you start to dress more modestly. So she looked at me and she said, Rabbi, I don't feel inside yet like a Rebbetzin. I don't want to look on the outside like a Rebbetzin. I would be a hypocrite. So I said, you know what you can be compared to? The following. Somebody comes to shul on Simchas Torah, and he says, I don't really feel happy. And if I get up and dance, I'm a hypocrite because people will think I'm happy with the Torah. So I'm going to sit here and contemplate being happy. And as soon as I'm happy, I'm going to get up and dance. The guy will sit there till Tisha B'Av. That's not how you become happy. You become happy by dancing. That's not hypocritical. A hypocrite is somebody who wants to put on a show. He doesn't want to be happy with the Torah. the farthest thing from his mind, but he wants people to think he is. That's a hypocrite. But a person who wants to be happy, just they're not there. So the way to do it is to dance. Dance, you'll become happy. Motions create emotions. So I told her, if you'll dress modestly, you'll begin to feel modest. If you constantly dress immodestly, you're never going to feel modest. So the way to get to things in this world is by going through the motions. Nothing hypocritical about that. That's what all mitzvahs are. Material things that a person does to get his neshama moving. That is the one purpose of physical things in this world. It's very hard to motivate your spiritual side directly. You need to motivate your physical side, and through that, the emotions and spirituality are generated. Okay, it's like a starter motor. They used to have them in cars. I don't know what they do now, how it works, ignition-wise. But when you turn the key, there wasn't enough power in the battery to turn on that big motor. So there was a starter motor, and that starter motor turned on the big motor. The key turned on the starter motor, and the starter motor turned on the big motor. Same thing over here. You have to get your body moving, and that helps to get your neshama moving too. So that is the first reason why physical things are important, because they help to generate spiritual things. Physical things generate spirituality if used properly. That's the first thing.
Did she accept it?
Did she accept it? I think so. Yes, she did. The second thing was, the second thing is that the physical things in this world create a framework within which the spiritual can function. You can't have a neshama in this world that's just flitting around. That's called being dead. If you want to exist in this world, you have to have a body where the neshama can be contained within that body.
Could be at home.
What?
Could be at home.
Right, exactly. You need a home. You need a misgeret. That misgeret is called the physical world. You need a home to have spiritual values in. You can't live on the subway or outside. You have to have four walls, and in that you can infuse holiness. Yes.
Rabbi Lev, what do we do? I must have asked this question really 100 times about men and women who dress terribly immodestly in Yerushalayim on the bus. And
I don't take buses.
Well, we.
I know. That was not the answer.
It's rather disgusting to say that.
What can you do? The first thing you can do is dress modestly, so you're a good example to these people. That's the first thing. Dress modestly in a way that is attractive and not attracting, so people see that you can dress modestly and still not look like a schlump and look like a mensch. That's one thing you can do. Okay. The second thing you can do is, if you have influence over anybody close to you that's not like that, right? Not somebody on the bus, right? You can subtly, nicely influence them. Yeah, okay. The as long as you don't get used to it and it bothers you, there's hope.
Because I'm there. Okay. Yeah. One day, not too long ago, there was this beautiful young woman, upper teenager, she was sitting next to me. Very, very immodest. And her instructor said, "You have to forgive me. She's such a gorgeous young woman. Look at her gorgeous face. Yeah, and gorgeous eyes. Nobody would look at your bosom. They'd rather look at your face." And I said, "Forgive me for telling you that, but I just have to tell you how gorgeous you are." She didn't slap me. She didn't spit at me. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, that's, again, what she said was that this girl was dressed immodestly, and she told her very nicely, you don't need to expose yourself to be pretty. And you are a holy young woman. This is inappropriate, an inappropriate way to dress. If you tell people things like that in a positive way, right, and don't tell them in a way that will definitely make them hate
Yiddishkeit.
Right. So then you have a chance that maybe you can get the message across. But you can't go to everybody on the bus and start telling them. Huh? If a person's ugly, then maybe they need to dress nicer so they'll look nicer. Nobody's ugly. Everybody has something nice about them. So the second reason why physical things are important, because they create the mizgeret, the plant, the framework for spiritual things to exist. If you don't have a physical plant, you can't have spiritual things. The third reason is that many times physical things aid spiritual things. For instance, if you want to be able to learn Torah, you want to be able to come to a shir, it's very positive to eat. Because if you don't eat for quite a few days, you're very, very weak, and you can't get up out of bed, so you can't come to the shir. So if you want to come to a shir and enjoy something spiritual, you need to eat, and that helps and aids the spiritual pursuits that you want to have. So you need many times physical things to aid and to work together with the spiritual. And the fourth thing is that the physical, this is what we started with, the physical things express spiritual things. We can't see spirituality. So we need something to focus on that we can see with our senses that expresses that inner spirituality to the point where even in our relationship with God, okay, we don't have idols to represent God, but we do have things that are permissible where we put our focus, physical focus on to represent God. For instance, when we bow by Olenu or any other time, what do? Right? We do like the ballerinas, since God is everywhere, so we stand on one foot and make a circle and bow to all the directions, up and down also. That's what we should do. What do? We bow towards the Aron Kodesh. Why? Do any of us think that God is in the Aron Kodesh? And when we lock him in over there for the rest of the week, that's where he stays? Right? God's not in the Aron Kodesh. He's everywhere. So why do we bow towards an Aron Kodesh? Because we need something to focus our physical attention on, right? Because we are not spiritual beings. We are physical beings who live in a world where there's direction, where we have to use our senses to sense spiritual things in a physical way. So we bow towards an Aron Kodesh. We need something to direct our eyes to. And the same thing with all the other five senses. If you want to express spiritual things, it has to be expressed and experienced through physical senses. So those are the ideas of how the physical world is important when it is an aid, either in expressing spiritual things or promoting spiritual things or giving generating spiritual things or giving a framework for spiritual things or aiding in those spiritual things, all four things. Now, if you think about it, it says that the Yevanim, last week we spoke about this, where did the time go? Okay, Nick, we'll do this quickly. I don't want to hold you here more than I have to. The Yevanim made basically five decrees against the Jewish people. The two we're going to put together. Shabbos, Bris Milah, Rosh Chodesh, women, and money. Last week we explained what these were. Again, it's on the tape. So if you want to know in detail. But you think about it. So Shabbos is the neshama of the physical world. But it's the physical world that creates Shabbos. It generates Olam Haba. What you do in this world generates your spiritual world. So yes, they wanted to take the neshama, the Olam Haba away. But we consider the Olam Hazeh, the physical world, also important, because that's how you earn your share in the world to come. That's what generates, it's the motions that create the emotions. It's the Olam Hazeh that creates Olam Haba. Second thing was Bris Milah. Yeah, a soul. They wanted to take Bris Milah away to show there's no soul. But the body's also important, because without the body, there's no soul in this world either. The souls can be in the next world. They can't be in this world without a body. So it's the second purpose of the physicality. Yes, by us, the soul is the main thing, but the body's also important as a receptacle to the soul. That's why we bury a body after death, because the body was a receptacle to the soul. It's just like a mantle to a Sefer Torah gets Kedusha. And the third thing was Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is time, has a neshama that we put into it. But time is also important, because time is a way of expressing that Kedusha. Meaning, there are times of the year like Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkot where those are things that we do externally that reflect the inner holiness of those times. But we do it in a physical way. That's Rosh Chodesh. And then there is the fourth thing, the aid. You need physical things to aid in your spiritual pursuits. A woman creates the infrastructure of a home that aids you to be able to do things spiritual. You can't be mekayim the mitzvah nasas arkim if you don't have a home. You can't invite people to the subway. I live on the subway. Would you like to come and visit me? Right? You can't do that. You need a home. Right? And you need a aids to be able to help in fulfilling the spiritual things in this world. So that's money, and women are that a job of a woman is to create the infrastructure which aids her husband in doing spiritual things, learning Torah, whatever, but she's the one who gives him the ability to do it. She gives him a meal. She creates a home. She creates an environment which is conducive to want to do spiritual things. The woman is the helper, the ezer kenegdo. The same thing, well, the enabler, right. Right. Any word you want to say is fine with me. I'm very much for women. It's okay. The same thing with money. Money also is an enabler to be able to do spiritual things. If you don't have money, there's very few mitzvahs that you can do. You can't buy an estrogen lulav, and you can't pay your shul dues or whatever other things that you need to do to be able to do spiritual things. And that's why, and this is the last thing, it says in the Alanisim, the Achar Kein Bo'u Bonecho L'Dvir Beisecho, after this, when they were victorious over the Greeks, and they wanted now to show the importance of the spiritual world over the physical, and eventually lit the menorah, that spiritual power, but they did four things. Bo'u L'Dvir Beisecho, they went into the house, Dvir Beisecho, to the Kodesh, to generate those spiritual feelings. You need a place to generate it. So they came to generate those feelings. Upinu es heicholecho. They cleaned out the heichol. You need a place, a misgeret. You have to be cleaned out. You have to have a place where the spiritual can exist within a framework. The tiharu es mikdashecho. They purified the mikdash in order to aid. If you want to feel spiritually pure, you have to be in a place that's physically pure. So it aids in that. And lastly, Hidliku Neiros, they lit the candles to express that spirituality externally and something you could see. So all the reasons why physical things aid and help the spiritual, those are the things that are represented in the end of the Al Hanisim.
I just feel that I can't live without you.